I'm David Cole. It's coming up on 11:15. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant.
Welcome to 91.1 FM, WGTD. This is Marlo Harmon again, your host for today's Community Matters, where we discuss important issues that are relevant to you and to our community at large. Last month, we talked to Naomi Baden, who is the executive director of Racine Educational Association, and she shared with us her perspective on how she believes the union is working with the school district to make changes that are going to improve and better our students and the community at large. Today, our guest is going to be Dr. Lolly Halls, who is superintendent of Racine Unified School District. And she's going to be able to share with us possibly a different perspective on what she thinks is going to assist us in making better changes so that we can improve in our overall educational programs for the Racine Unified School District. Welcome, Dr. Halls. How are you today?
Well, thank you, Marlo. Glad to be here.
Great. Glad to have you. Why don't we start out with you providing us just a little bit of information with regards to your roles and your duties and how your career experiences have added value to the goal of galvanizing individuals in an effort to increase our test scores, close achievement gaps, and increase graduation rates for our public school students.
Well, you know, Marlo, I've been an educator all my life, literally since I was 6 years old. I wanted to be a teacher when I was in first grade. I knew it then. And I was the oldest of seven kids. At that time, I would have been the oldest of five. My mom had two more. But I was put in charge of my brothers and sisters on our farm in Minnesota. And I was put in charge of not only watching them, I was also responsible for making sure that before they went to kindergarten, they all knew how to read and do the ABCs and count their numbers to 100. And beyond that, we played summer school all summer long in the woods out in my backyard. Then I taught summer school Sunday school, I should say, vacation Bible school, and finally went on to become a teacher. Couldn't believe it when I got my first teaching job and actually got paid to do something I'd been volunteering for my whole life.
Yeah,
I taught special education. I was a teacher of the deaf. So I'm very good at sign language and taught for 13 years in South Dakota, Minneapolis area, and also in St. Louis area. Okay. Then I became a principal because I was so enamored with the idea of working with teachers. Teaching is always something that I've loved, and being a principal, you get to work with teachers every day. So I was a principal I was an assistant principal 3 years, and then a principal for 19 years, 10 in one school in St. Louis, and then 6 years in a school in Arlington, Virginia, which is right by the Pentagon.
Right.
We had a school there, Oak Ridge Elementary School. That school had kids from 60 countries who spoke 40 languages.
Challenging,
so
I can
imagine. So it was a wonderful place. We were right by the high-rise apartments in Pentagon City, and we had all the diplomats and military families from all over the world working at the Pentagon and in the embassies in D.C. So I got to meet and work with so many families. That was wonderful. And then after that, I always knew the road I took to my school in Arlington. I came to a fork in the road, and then if I went to the right, I would end up at Oak Ridge, my school. And if I went to the left, I would be on the bridge, Memorial Bridge, over into Washington, D.C. And I always knew that I needed to go to a Washington, D.C. school someday because I always have had a calling, like I said, to work in special education, kind of working with the kids that other people might think are the underdogs or you know, those that were going to have a more challenging way to go. But
more
I always believed that
students.
Yeah, and I always believed, you know, that, gosh darn it, these kids can do it too. I did it too. I had a lot of disadvantages growing up very, very poor and in an isolated place. And people might have labeled me as somebody who didn't have much of a chance. And education was everything to me. So as luck would have it, I got a call one day from D.C., Public Schools recruiting me to come on over and work in D.C., and I thought about it for a half a second and said yes.
Okay.
So then I worked there for 3 years. As an area superintendent, I was over 13 different schools in the Washington, D.C. public schools in the Capitol Hill area and the Petworth area. And then all of a sudden, we realized, my husband and I, we were going to move to live in the D.C. area. His job took us there, and we were going to just be there 3 years, and all of a sudden it was 10 years.
Okay.
And we were grumping about the traffic every single day because the traffic is awful there.
So, I've been to D.C.
So yeah, I said, you know what, we just need to move back to the Midwest because my mom is getting older and my brothers and sisters. And so anyway, we started looking for superintendent jobs in the Midwest, and here I am in Racine.
Okay. So your background is kind of diverse. You've been a teacher, principal. You've worked with some at-risk students. How will that experience, but this is the first time that you've worked as a superintendent in your background.
That's true.
How will your experience as a teacher, as a principal, and for the last 2 years as superintendent?
This is my third year I'm in.
Going into your third year. How are you going to kind of bring these teachers and parents together, because as of late there has been a lot of controversy, it seems. Well, that's what the newspapers are saying and some of the blogs. How are you going to pull people together, because right now the school board itself is kind of divided evenly, even 4-4 with regards to how we move forward?
So the school board is certainly looking at some different issues, and they have two strong opinions and people on both sides of those opinions about some topics. But our teachers are, we are there, you know, we're working hard. Our teachers are doing great work. We have lots of things in place, and we're seeing a lot of positive success in our student results. Our reading and math scores are up in our elementary grades, especially kindergarten and first grade. Our ninth graders on track to graduation is way up. Our graduation rates are way up. We have a high school transformation effort underway to make sure that all of our high school students are part of a career academy that trains them up and prepares them for whatever career or post-high school training choice they want. And all of those things and the great collaboration that's going on, our curriculum is, all of our curriculum is under review and rewriting by our teachers. I mean, everywhere I turn and everywhere I look and everywhere I go, I just see great things happening. Now, are there some issues that the board is struggling through? Absolutely. But that doesn't affect the everyday teaching that's going on in our classrooms. And that's where I want to focus my attention.
Okay. Speaking about some of the things that you've just said, you've argued that the district is really making some solid progress on the number on a number of fronts that show a narrowing of the achievement gap, which I have seen. Graduation rate is one of the shining examples that you have spoke about in the past. What instructional programs have been put in place that are now bearing fruit for these graduation rates?
Well, our graduation rates are what we've been looking at is a five-year trend. And, of course, the state takes a while to compile all their data. So the most recent graduation rate, I have to say, is for the 13-14 year, which be the June 14 graduating class. So we're actually a year behind. I can't wait to see for this past June, because I know it's going to be even better. But we did have, in the year 14, the highest, largest increase in graduation rate of any place in the state of Wisconsin. We went up by 5%. We've increased in the last 5 years our African-American student graduation rate by 21%. We've increased our Hispanic graduation rate by 15%. And even our overall white student graduation rate has gone up by 6%. So we have made tremendous progress in the last 5 years. I certainly can't take credit for that. Our teachers have been working hard and doing, our social workers, our guidance counselors, our principals have been working very hard. Something that has been different in the last couple years is that we've put in place opportunities for students who are what we call off track, who are short of credits, a way to not have to, it used to be if you, for example, took freshman algebra and you took it in ninth grade and you didn't pass the class, you had to wait all the way to the end of the year and then say, oops, got to take it over. You failed. And so now I'm a sophomore still taking that freshman algebra class. And maybe it's still hard. Oops, what if I fail again? Now I'm a junior and I still have my algebra. Now, all of a sudden, I have no way to graduate because I need two or three math courses, and I still haven't passed freshman algebra. So what's different now, we have a program called Odysseyware. So a student who may be already struggling in algebra as a freshman in November can go online, and while they're still in the class with the teacher, be over here after school or during a planning period, study period, and catching up on those units that they're struggling with and show on the computer program that they passed the unit and get credit back for that. Or if I fail the class this summer, for example, we had dozens and dozens of freshmen in summer school online catching up on all these classes. And they don't have to take the whole class over. They take an assessment that says, you know, of this whole algebra class, it's these three units or these four concepts that you haven't mastered. Mm-hmm. And so they just study up on the computer program online learning those units, those things, and then they take an end-of-course exam and they pass. So they can very quickly get the credit back.
Okay.
So those things are helping our students not have to go all the way back and start over every fall. They can. They have other ways of approaching getting their credits earned and getting the mastery of the content. That's just an example in our
high
schools.
And being able to bring the final numbers with regards to that, you said you're a little behind. There's some, you wouldn't know exactly how successful that has been until.
Well, no, that has been in place for a couple of years, but we're always a year behind. So the graduating class of this past June, we don't have those results in yet from the state, but we're confident that that's even better. Something else we've done just in the last couple of years, we have something we call freshman cohorts. We know that freshmen who have six credits, means they've passed six courses by the end of their freshman year or more, are four times more likely to graduate than a student who is short, has less than six credits. So we have put tremendous resources, energy, and focus on our freshmen getting those credits.
Okay.
So that means that in our high schools now, instead of walking in as a freshman and getting a random schedule all over the building, you are now part of what we call a freshman cohort, a smaller group of about 125 students. Those 125 students have the same four teachers for English, science, social studies, and math. They have the same assistant principal. They have the same counselor. And they have a person called a freshman advocate. And that freshman advocate's job is sort of to be the mom at school, saying, where's your homework?
Okay.
You are late. I'm calling your mom because you're not coming to school. What happened to you here? You know, why? You know, you need to take that test over again, those kinds of things. So that freshman advocate, there's three in each of our big high schools, Park, Horlick, and Case. For one each, there's three small subgroups of freshmen.
Okay.
And we've gone from just 2 years ago having 60% of our freshmen with six credits to this past June, now 73%.
Okay.
That means this year in our 10th grade, we have 180 more children who already have their six credits.
And so this program has been in place the last two years.
And so I can't wait. I mean, those kids are in 10th grade. What will that be for our graduation rate? You know,
so we'll be able to see.
So it's going to continue to go.
In 2 years. Okay, awesome.
The other thing we're doing is in our early grades, I mean, our kindergarten, right away when I started here in Racine, we put something in. I was quite surprised to see that in the fall of that year before I came, the children in kindergarten, we had about 25 or 26% of our kindergartners who were not where they should be. But by the end of the kindergarten year, we had 33% who weren't where they should be. So it actually got worse over the course of a year in terms of the kindergartners be ready for first grade. So we put something in place right away. It's called Foundations. It's a structured way for teachers to teach phonics and letter sounds and syllables and those kinds of things that you need to begin reading. And we went from having, like I said, 33% of our kids not where they should be to just this past year, this past spring, only 14%. So we've got about 400 more children coming into first grade this year ready to read than we had just 2 years ago.
And
we're seeing the same thing in first grade, and now we put that in place last year in first grade, and now this year we're putting foundations into our second grade. So we have gone from none of our grade levels showing students at the national average on our reading and math, to now our kindergarten and first grade are slightly above the national average, and our second grade will be there this year. I know it because that strong group of students is coming their way. So we have some really good gains in these last few years.
Some really positive information.
And it goes all the credit to our teachers. You know, they've done a great job.
Speaking of teachers, one of the things that has been kind of in the news as of late has really been the struggle between the teachers' unions and some of the decisions. The main thing as of late has been the handbook. Up until about 2 years ago, you know, the past superintendents and Board of Educations have disagreed that the legal advice that is saying that there may be some illegal activity with how the handbook is compared to what is going on with Act 10. And there is some really solid, just like you've said, some really solid divide on the discussions about that or the beliefs about that. One of the questions that I'd like to ask you is that, you know, recently the Board of Education voted to uphold the handbook process and asserted that it was perfectly legal. Some school board members are accepting the advice of pro-Act 10 lawyers when they are not required to do so. Tell me your position on this, and do you think that some of the conflict and controversy may go away if the district used more collaborative lawyers?
That's kind of an odd question. You know, our attorneys, we've had these same attorneys in this same legal firm for many years in Racine, and they've advised the board and the superintendent all these long, many years on all matters related to all kinds of issues. There are many, many laws pertaining to education, financing, hiring, employment, special education, all kinds of laws. And it's the job of the superintendent, of course, to make sure that we are compliant with the law. And it's certainly also the job of the school board to make sure that we're compliant in all matters regarding the law. So, you know, Act 10 isn't a matter of opinion. It's a law. And there is some possibility, I suppose, of some slight difference of an opinion about how the law would be interpreted, and that would be determined through the courts. But it's mainly our attorney's position and our attorney's obligation to provide advice as to what is in compliance with our laws. So,
but not all attorneys are saying that the handbook and what is in the handbook is a violation of Act 10. Matter of fact, Act 10 has been in existence for at least the last 10 years.
No, I don't think it's been quite that long.
Since about 2011, Act 10 has been in.
So about 4 or 5 years,
yeah,
right?
4 or 5 years. And Paul Ryan, Scott Walker, other individuals that are in position to really understand and know the background of Act 10 have not made any issue with regards to it. The teachers have voted to keep it in the handbook. School board members have voted to keep it in the handbook. The only individuals it seems to suggest that it possibly could be illegal are pro-Act 10 lawyers.
Well, I'm not sure how you assume people are pro-Act 10 lawyers, but let me say that The point of contention is around one part of the handbook. And the handbook is a quite thick document that lists out all of the rules and procedures and processes for employment, for teachers' working conditions. It's very similar to a teacher's contract. It's very, very similar to the original teacher's contract prior to Act 10. Section 13 is a part that says, how do we change the handbook? How do we make any changes? And what the handbook says is that if you want to make a change to the handbook, you want to change how many days a year a teacher works, for example. I'm just going to pick a small example. Then there would be a committee, equal number of administrators and union representatives, and we would talk about the language and we would come to consensus, meaning we would all agree on a change. Mm-hmm. If we couldn't agree, we have the option. This is all what's in the handbook. This is all in that section. That okay. If we couldn't agree, then we would possibly get a facilitator and have that facilitator help us come to consensus. And once we've come to consensus, then we could come to the school board, and the school board would approve the change. So the question is, you know, Act 10 explicitly prohibits negotiation or collective bargaining. And so how that process of coming to consensus, how that process of getting a facilitator to have us come to consensus, how that happens is really the question, because if it looks anything like negotiation or collective bargaining, then it would be prohibited in Act 10. So that's really one of the major points of contention, is that kind of process, the process that would be in compliance with mm-hmm. Act 10. What I would prefer to do and what I have asked to do and actually what I've tried to do mm-hmm. is not only meet with four, five, however many union representatives about these changes, but to say to all of the teachers, here are some changes we'd like to make. What is your input? What do you think? What do you think okay. about these changes? Let me hear from you. Let us all hear. Let me take that into consideration. Let's make some adjustments based on your feedback, mm-hmm. and then let's take it to the board and say, here are the changes that we'd recommend. Here's the input that we've gotten. Here's what we changed, and this is what we're recommending to the board. So that's the process that I've proposed would be more inclusive, more collaborative with all of our teachers, and certainly not in any way any kind of worry that we are negotiating or collective bargaining in violation of the law.
Okay. Has any of that taken place? From what I understand, a lot of meetings have not occurred. Matter of fact, a couple of weeks ago, the school board, Racine School Board meeting, couldn't even be finalized because a couple of people walked out of the meeting. Yeah. So are you able to do that?
So those are two different things. So we did meet with a handbook committee did meet earlier this year. We met three times, I believe, in total to try to discuss some of the changes.
Okay.
That wasn't very fruitful, and we certainly didn't come to any kind of agreement. And then the question of was this in compliance with Act 10 or not came up. And also we were challenged as to, because the board has set that handbook committee up as a committee, that it also needs to be a public meeting and not a private meeting. Mm-hmm. So all of that has been suspended until the board makes a decision. So the okay. board has that question of Section 13 and whether we should change that committee process or not before them, and the board is divided on that. Okay. And because a couple of board members were on vacation, the one group of board members who felt one way about Section 13 did not want to have a meeting because their position would have lost in a vote. So they didn't want to have a meeting where they would be asked to vote. So okay. they did not attend the meeting, or they left the meeting so that they couldn't vote on that matter. So that okay. matter is still out there for
yes.
the board to decide whether we want to retain the current process of meeting only with the union representatives and being required to reach consensus
okay.
or have a facilitated session before we make any changes, or should we just move forward with listening to input from everybody about changes we'd like to make and then bring it to the board based on the input that we've gotten. So the board is divided on that right now.
Yeah. And it really seems like there is a stalemate. Not a lot of business has been able to get done, especially with some of the new things that are trying to or the current president is trying to implement. And one of them is the renegotiating of salaries or that with regards to salaries and the handbook. But it's not just some of the Racine individuals that may be in disagreement with how things are going in Racine Public School District. Caledonia and Sturtevant, matter of fact, they are making plans to recede from Racine Unified School District. What do you believe are some of their reasons for doing this, and what possibly can you do within the next 2 to 3 years to change those reasons?
Well, you know, if you know, Marla, I don't know if you know Racine very well. Are you? I don't know if you're from Racine or not, but if you
I'm a public school product.
Right. You know, if you started in Central Racine on Main Street and drove out to 7 Mile Road, on a nice afternoon, you would go through so many different kinds of neighborhoods, wouldn't you? You would go all the way from
quite diverse,
you know, from houses densely packed together on streets, older homes, all the way out, you know, through middle income suburbs, and then out to farmlands, and then some isolated subdivisions popping up here and there. Yeah. And it seems pretty far away. And I think what the district, Racine Unified, has not done a good job of is recognizing how broad and wide the district is. Mm-hmm. And we haven't always listened well to constituents in the further parts of the district, like Sturtevant and Caledonia. Something I'm personally committed to, and I'm sure the board is too, is to do a better job of listening to all of our constituents and listening to all of the different diverse needs and desires. So I believe we have done that already to a much greater degree than has been done in a long time.
Okay.
And then I've gone to different Caledonia and Mount Pleasant, Sturtevant village board meetings. I've talked with them. We've had the elected officials come and talk here about the great results that we're getting. Also, you know, we're building 2 new schools in Caledonia. We're building Olympia Brown in Caledonia, and that will open in the fall. And one of the things we did hear from our Caledonia further north and west is that they felt like coming to middle school was a long way away for them, and that they really wanted a neighborhood middle school. So we are actually adding on to Gifford so that it will be an elementary and a middle school. So those families that live in that part of the district will have a neighborhood middle school as well as neighborhood elementary schools, and they'll be brand new, beautiful buildings. So we are listening to them. We passed a referendum, and one of our first priorities on the list was to address the fact that we need to provide Caledonia mm-hmm. residents with schools for their children and their part of the community. We are sincerely committed to listening better and more, and making sure that just as we listen to parents in other parts of the district, we listen to the needs and the concerns of those people too. I really believe that some of the people who would like to talk about secession are passionate about that desire to do so.
They seem like they really are.
I don't know that they're a majority of mm-hmm. our parents, and I do know that secession would bring along with it many costs and increases in property taxes to sustain and establish a brand new school system is expensive. But they will find that out, and they will look at that, and those citizens will decide, I'm sure, which direction they'd like to go. Meantime, I think we're building them some fabulous new schools that they'll be very proud to claim in their neighborhoods.
That's good. That's good. RUSD, like other urban districts in the country, is struggling with student discipline problems. Matter of fact, looking at the last numbers from RUSD, expulsion rates, suspension rates typically are much higher for children of color. And this has, through a lot of research, suggested that it creates a school-to-prison pipeline when students aren't in school, when they're being expelled, suspended, and they're not receiving the education that they need. How will, unfortunately, this is actually, you know, alive and well in Racine. How are you attempting to deal with these problems? And are you seeing any change in this area with regards to reducing and continuing to reduce disciplinary problems, but especially suspensions and expulsions?
Mm-hmm. We are very much focused on that. You know, we have 3 major priorities in the district that we've had now for 3 years in what we call Raising Racine. That's our overall 3-year plan to improve all conditions in the district. One of them is one priority is achievement of all students. The second priority is achievement gaps. And the third priority is just what you listed, which is to make sure that every school has a safe, positive environment for children and for the adults. You know, we're coming out of an era that started in the 80s, I would guess, called zero tolerance. You misbehave, you're out. And mm-hmm. that, and we will not tolerate anything, you know, boom, you're done. You did it, you're done. Well, what that has caused, as you just said, is that we send children out of school away from an opportunity to learn for a lot of different kinds of behaviors. And so just like schools all across the country, we're having all of us in education have to step back a minute and say, you know, there are certainly, of course, behaviors and incidents that would say you can't be in school if you're going to do that. But there are also times when sometimes children are excluded from school for a behavior or an incident that could be addressed with the teacher or with the principal or inside the school and mm-hmm. keep the child in school. So we have lots of things in place right now and more to come. Dr. Gallion, who's our deputy superintendent, I've charged him this year with putting together a 3-year strategic plan exclusively around school climate and student discipline so that we have a systematic plan for addressing skills that our teachers need mm-hmm. to have classroom management. Kids are very different today than they were 20 years mm-hmm. ago. And if you've been a teacher a long time like me, you've really seen that change. Parents yeah. are very different. Parents yeah. of young children now are very different than when I was a parent or when my parents were parents.
Yes, yes.
And the kinds of problems that kids bring to school are very different. Urban schools with a lot of poverty bring kids to us who are in lives filled with stress, dysfunction, mental health issues, drug and alcohol abuse in families, dysfunction, joblessness, all kinds of issues that exacerbate, you know, a child's ability to function happily, ready to learn. Hunger is a major problem. Homelessness is a major problem. Children come to school very stressed. Parenting is very different. Parents don't always teach children the kind of self-regulation of their emotion, how to manage upset feelings without lashing out. They don't always have a sense of good structure. Now, that's not all of our families, of course. I'm talking broad stereotypes, but we see more and more of that, especially in high-poverty schools. We have lots of things in place. First of all of our schools now have what we call PBIS, which is Positive Behavior Intervention and Support Programs. Every school has a team of teachers who work collaboratively with the principal to put together a plan for their school to focus on the positive, to recognize, reward, honor, and celebrate children as they do good things, and to, of course, increase the number of students doing that. We have, and that always revolves around respect, responsibility, and safety. We put together a new student code book, which is all of the rules for student discipline. And we've actually laid out these, a list of behaviors that are teacher responsibility, a list of behaviors that should go to the principal, and then a list of behaviors that are suspendable. Okay. And so teachers and principals, everybody kind of has an understanding of what kinds of behaviors warrant what kind of intervention. We have responsive classroom, which is a way to have morning meetings in elementary school so that as children come in upset or disheveled from whatever happened at home, to calm down, come together as a group, and then get on with the day. Our middle schools, we have something called violence-free zones where people who actually live in those communities in our 4 middle schools who are on social media watching what kids are texting back and forth, who's getting ready to have an argument with who, they can actually go to their house that night. They can meet them first thing in the morning and talk with students and get it solved before it turns into a fight or an argument. We've seen tremendous success with that, huge reduction in behavior incidents in our middle schools. So we've got lots of things going on and more to come.
Thank you so much. Again, this is Marlo Harmon, your host for today's Community Matters, and we are talking to Dr. Lolly Hawes, who is superintendent of the Racine Unified School District. Dr. Hawes, those are some great things that you have mentioned with regards to how to kind of rein in some of the disciplinary issues that are going on in our school district. And I'm just going to have to just take the you know, opposing side to that and just ask you one more challenging question with that. All of the things that you have mentioned are good, but they seem to be reactive, encouraging students to be more positive and giving them praise. That should be regardless of disciplinary action. Creating a new rule book, code book, so that there seem to be more rules, doesn't seem to really be proactive. What I have seen, it seems, is that many of the reasons why children of color are being suspended or expelled from school may have something to do with drugs, maybe some violence, weapons, or gun-like weapons or things like that. What are you doing to be proactive with regards to those issues? How are you dealing with children who are bringing drugs into school? How are you being proactive instead of reactive when the children do that? How are you being proactive with regards to violence and bullying and individuals feeling like they need to bring weapons to school? Because all of what you are saying still will not decrease suspension rates if we have a zero tolerance rule.
Well, we will reduce suspensions, I think, by the code book didn't make more rules. It just clarified I don't like your attitude today is not a suspendable offense. In some cases, that might have been suspendable in previous years. You've been sleeping in my class for 4 days in a row. You're out of here. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things are no longer something that we can suspend for. Certainly, if a child brings drugs to school, especially with intent to sell, or brings any kind of weapon to school, or things of that nature, of course they're suspended because those are violations of the law. What are we doing on the other side of that? Starting in elementary, this year we're piloting in two of our elementary schools a mental health, on-site mental health services for some of our children. We recognize that some of our children have mental health issues and we need to address that. We've increased from zero to now two people who are family engagement specialists. So we have got to engage our families. We have to help our parents have a better understanding of their role and responsibilities as parents, things to be aware of, to check their child's backpack, make sure there isn't a knife in there, make sure there isn't, don't buy your child a look-alike BB gun that you might take to school and get True. Expelled for. We've had training for our teachers in what we call mental health literacy, so they understand the difference between a child who's acting out because of terrible stress or anger about something happening home versus a child who's just being naughty and behaving badly, and to know what to do with that. We've been partnering with the Johnson Foundation and a lot of mental health providers in our community over the last few years that is in place now across Racine to have better access for families to mental health care. We're putting together, and even more so this year, a whole series of parenting classes and programs and parenting engagement activities and opportunities so that our parents have a better understanding of what they can do, where they can get help, and what kinds of things they need to be on the lookout for their children.
Okay.
We certainly recognize that we have a major initiative getting ready. You probably saw that in the paper recently with the police department called STOP, where children learn how to engage when they see a police officer, how to appropriately engage with a police officer so they don't get into the kind of trouble you just don't talk to a police officer. That way you're going to get yourself worked up and get yourself arrested before you know it. So teaching children in that middle school age how to engage with police officers in a way that isn't going to exacerbate the situation. We've had many of our staff in what we call de-escalation training so that when you confront a student about a behavior or something, what do you say that doesn't turn it into a worse situation? How do you help calm the situation down?
Okay.
And so we're providing that kind of training to our teachers and our principals so that when things happen in the class, I don't say just the wrong thing to turn it from
Right.
somebody upset to somebody who throws the book across the room, you know. So we have many things like that in place. That's why we need a strategic plan that we can put together to make sure it's in place everywhere in the same way across the whole district and every school, and that our community, our parents, and our teachers all know exactly what all of those components are. So when they have a struggle, they know where to turn. Another one last thing I can share is that we have our schools organized into clusters. So in the elementary level, 4, 5, 6 schools in a cluster, they all have a behavior specialist person who, if I'm having a particular problem with one particular student, that person can come into the classroom, observe the child, see what kind of behaviors are going on, and sit down with the teachers and put together a plan just for that child based on, you know, does this happen every day during math? Is it always at recess? Is it with a certain child? Is it when I have free time, or is it when I have, you know, reading time? And then we can come up with a plan that addresses whatever seems to be causing the problem. So we can get to the root of the problem rather than always just figuring out what's the punishment for that. We can figure out what's causing that, what's prompting that, and remove that so that that behavior decreases. So all of our teachers have access to that as well.
That is good. And I think that that will benefit all involved, teachers, students, mm-hmm. parents overall. What do you think about the community schools movement? Do you think that it could work here in Racine?
Oh, it's absolutely. We already have. We're building a community school. Knapp is being built to be a community school. We've been working for the last 2 years, actually, with United Way of Racine County, Rodney Prenti. And last year, I had an opportunity to go to San Diego, and I toured 3 or 4 community schools. Mr. Prunty has gone to visit some in other places, and we've sent some teachers and principals to see some other community schools, the people at Knapp, and we are very excited about that. A community school really means that in addition to being a, you know, 8 o'clock to 4 o'clock kind of school with teachers and a principal and all of that, it is also open in the evenings and on weekends for community events, for parenting classes, for mm-hmm. basketball, for parent meetings, for community meetings. It also might provide, we're looking at having a mental health counselor perhaps stop by on a regular basis so parents can get a prescription filled right there at school instead of having to drive over to the doctor's office. looking at things like maybe a dentist would come through once a month to see children who need some dental care. Some schools and some places actually have food pantries. Dr. Jones is getting ready to have a food pantry really? As part of their school. So we're partnering with United Way, and that United Way is going to help us provide some staff for the evenings and weekends. So that school will be more than just 8 o'clock to 4 o'clock, and then they lock the doors and everybody goes home. It will be open at night. It'll be open on the weekends. And all kinds of whatever you can imagine
could be possible. Are all those things going to be happening at Knapp?
Well, Knapp, the community of Knapp, they're all collaborating together with Principal Tangela King and with United Way, uh-huh. and they have identified for their community school mm-hmm. what are the most important components for them. And okay. I know one of the major ones is that there's a place for the children after school and on weekends to go and play.
That's good.
We're working with the police department on that, with mental health services, with Wheat and Friends. All those different components will be engaged and figure out what that community needs. Every community school is that idea or concept, but what every school needs is a little different
yes.
depending on their community.
That's
so,
true.
I mean, if we looked at another school, we've talked about some other schools where maybe we have a larger Spanish population, that school might have English classes for parents, mm-hmm. for example, or, you know, different things. So, but we are building a brand new school at Knapp right now. It's under construction, and it is built with some extra spaces and extra classes and with the idea that it's going to be a community school, and it will become the hub of that community. So the families who live there have that school as their place to go and be, the playgrounds, the fields, the inside, always open and available for that community. So we are very lucky
very
to be partnering
promising.
With United Way. We've yeah. been working on it for 2 years, and it's going to be great.
That is great. That is really solid news. I like to hear that. How often do the school board meet? If parents wanted to attend some of the meetings and see what was going on mm-hmm. in Racine, how often do they meet?
They meet the first and third Monday. So the first Monday of the month okay. is what they call a work session, and that's when we bring topics to the board that we want to inform them about, they want to discuss, they have questions. They don't vote on anything. They mm-hmm. literally just discuss different topics. And then the third Monday of the month is the business meeting, okay. And that's the meeting where there's public comments. So if somebody wanted to come and say something to the board or mm-hmm. speak their opinion about a particular matter, they would do that at that third Monday of the month meeting. And that's where the board actually votes okay. on different
the
topics.
The third Mondays?
And like a month like this now, in September, you know, because of Labor Day, it's actually become the second Monday and the fourth Monday, because whenever we have a Monday holiday, sometimes the schedule can get a little bit mixed up. But you can go to our website at any time, and it will tell.
And your website is?
RUSD.org.
Awesome.
And then you can look and see when the next board meeting is if you want to attend.